Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
I'm Brad Jackson.
And we got Norm back again.
Hey, everybody.
Actually, we just never let him leave. He's been stuck
in the nerd cave for the last week.
In nerd cave heaven.
I've got Led Slinger's whiskey and cigars. I mean, I'm fine.
Yeah, I mean, we are going to be talking about a Led Slinger today, because this episode we're going to be talking all about John Wick. So we had to break out the Led Slinger's whiskey in honor of Mr. Wick.
Seems appropriate.
He is a bourbon fan too. If we, you know, once we get into the show. So what are we smoking this week, Brad?
So this week we've got the CAO American Honor. This is going to sport a Connecticut shade and a broadleaf Maduro wrapper with Nicaraguan binders and fillers. And, you know, I'm going to put this one, to me, this is a little bit more on the medium side, but it does have, you know, a couple of changes throughout where you might say medium full.
Yes, I mean, medium smoke, full bodied flavor. It's basically, they started off with the CAO American blend and then kind of did something new because this was their special cigar honoring the troops, and also part of the proceeds go to a charity. Was it the Surfs?
Operation Surf.
Operation Surf, which helps treat disabilities and PTSD with surfing classes and stuff. It's apparently a very good program, and like I said, when you look at the links in our show notes for the cigar, there's links to that program as well if you want to check it out. But one of the cool things that's different about this cigar is it's a two-tone, like, as we mentioned, Connecticut wrapper and Maduro broadleaf, so it's a two-tone wrapper. It starts off with the Connecticut, then goes to the Maduro, and then the head of the cigar is also Connecticut, so you get a little bit of a flavor change as you're going through the cigar.
But I gotta say, one of the things that really strikes me and I really love about the cigar is the size of the American wrapper. So it's got an American flag wrapper on it that's probably a good 2.5-3 inches long.
Yeah.
That you remove to get to the actual cigar band. So, you know, great sense of patriotism and freedom the fuck on.
And another thing, too, to kind of compare this to the movie we're about to talk about, since it starts with that Connecticut shade groom, it starts kind of mild, just like the first John Wick movie starts, and then you hit that Maduro, and it goes all the way up, kind of like John Wick.
Absolutely. So, the other thing that we need to talk about that goes all the way up is our sponsor, Strike Force Energy.
Oh yeah, if you're gonna try to take on John Wick, you better call in the Strike Force. It's not that's about the only way to get full John Wick.
And even then, results may vary.
Yeah, that might not do it.
Speaking of which, I tried some Strike Force and whiskey the other night. I was a little drunk and a little overmixed, but hey, it tasted mostly like Strike Force with a little bit of bourbon aftertaste, which is not a bad thing to go.
I mean, I could almost see taking the lemon Strike Force with a little bit of whiskey and turning it into a pretty mean whiskey sour.
I mean, that's kind of what I accidentally made the other night, and it was pretty good. You can go to StrikeForceEnergy.com, use your promo code CigarNerds for 20% off your order.
Absolutely. So, as we get into the cigar, we'll continue to give our thoughts and feedback as we progress through it. I have had this cigar a time or two before, and there is some noticeable flavor change as well as a bit of a, strength once you get into that, Maduro wrapper. So
this is a good cigar if you're wanting to learn the differences between a Connecticut wrapper and a Maduro wrapper, because everything else in the cigar is exactly the same.
Yeah.
So that flavor change that hits you is straight wrapper. So that's That's, you know, it's kind of an educational experience too, if you want to, you know, compare something without having to smoke two cigars at once.
Education and freedom.
Well, exactly that. And also, since it's got, since the binder and filler are all Nicaraguan tobacco on the inside, it's not, even the kinetic part isn't just a super mild,
yeah,
super easy, I guess the best we can think of it. Smoke, yeah, typically, even with a wrapper.
Someone with a Connecticut wrapper has also got kind of a mild filler, and so those tend to be, I call them the wake and bake cigars because I can smoke them in the morning and they're not like too harsh. But yeah, since there's that Nicaraguan filler and stuff, it's still got a little strength for a Connecticut wrapper.
Absolutely. So with that, with no further ado, stay tuned for the main segment.
When in doubt, wick it out. This world doesn't need no opera. Here for the operation. We don't need bigger knife. Cause they got guns. We got guns. We got guns. We got guns. We got guns. Battle run. And welcome back to the podcast. So it's time to talk about John Wick.
Mr. Wick.
Yeah, you know, it's a place where, you know, he lives in an era where everybody knows his name.
Oh.
It's like Cheers.
What's one of those things where he walks into a place and says, "It's good to see you, Mr. Wick."
Yes. Yeah, I you know, started off with, we're talking about John Wick, the 2014 action movie, which I think it's, I mean, I've seen a ton of action movies. I grew up in the 80s when action movies were the king, but this is like the first new style. It's like a film noir action movie. It's almost an American version of the old, like, you know, like John Woo,
yeah,
you know, Chinese shoot 'em up movies that you know, but without the ridiculous action.
Yeah, you know, that's why.
No, actually, we've got some of that. Too.
But there's nobody like flying through the air doing, as they said in Hot Fuzz, firing two guns while leaping through the air. I didn't see anybody doing like crazy stuff like that. It was, you know, very much as they kind of coined the term gung-fu, where it's like shooting has become a martial art.
And I mean, well, that's one of the things that I, you know, really, I enjoyed about John Wick is, you know, so much of the action is not all that over the top. I mean, you know, as far as some of the gunplay and everything else, it's one of the few movies where, hell, he actually reloads. Like,
yes.
You don't see that in too many Hollywood films.
Well, John Wick seems, they seem to go out of their way to make sure that, at the very least, the fight scenes and the gunplay is as close to realistic as they can.
Yes.
For a movie. I mean, the man, he shoots at his mag, gets a slide lock, he reloads.
Yeah, I mean, it's, like I said, it's such different than what we've seen in previous movies where, as you said, people reload. The gunplay, and I think that's why it's so popular with, you know, gun enthusiasts, is the gunplay in the movies are as accurate as can possibly be. I mean, he even took a little damage, but here and there. But yeah, you know, most movies, you know, you never see anybody reload. It's a magical gun that holds infinite bullets. They've put in the Doom God code or something where you never run out of bullets and you never
IDKFA, get injured. IDKFA, son.
Exactly.
No, it's not. Isn't it pathetic? I still have that memorized.
Yes, it is. It's not just that. It's like, it's plausible. I can believe this part of the movie because what even people that are only experienced gun handling through movies and video games have some sort of idea of what should happen, and it falls into the level of believability for people.
You mean I can't just swing my arm, and arc it and curve bullets?
No.
You give that a shot and let me know how that works out for you.
Hey, man, this one gang wanted me to join because I couldn't hit my intended target, but I could hit all the people around them.
The Empire?
Like a good stormtrooper, always miss.
I think one of the things that the reason why we had this great action style is the directors, Chad Stalinsky and David Lidich, if I'm pronouncing that right. These guys, this was their first like directorial debut. The before they had been like second unit directors, but their primary. Yeah, there you go. Area of expertise is they were both stuntmen and stunt coordinators. And if you look at their resume, those guys have been in like, if you've seen an action movie in the last 20 years, these guys have either been a stuntman or a stunt coordinator. I mean, in fact, they met Keanu when working on the Matrix trilogy. So they were some of the stunt guys on that, you know, and
it wasn't one of the guys actually working with, Brandon Lee, you know, for the crew and stuff.
Stalinsky, apparently, when after Brandon Lee died, he was one of the guys who doubled Brandon Lee so they could complete the film. So, yeah, both these guys have been in Hollywood as, you know, action scene for a very long time. So when they decided to take the step up to director-producer, they're like, we're going to make this as real as possible, you know. I mean, there's large sequences in this movie where there is no dialogue. I mean, it's just gunfights and
but you know you're so like in tuned with the action and everything else that
the action itself almost tells a story. You don't need dialogue to know what the hell's going on.
Yeah, basically it's like interpretive dance for what's happening, except you know with bodies and guns.
Gun fu is my new favorite term because it he mixes, especially like some of those scenes like, well yeah, start off before we even get into that.
Yeah, let's tell the story of John Wick.
The movie starts off with
he's just a man.
A man who is like, you know, his wife has just passed away, and he's going through the initial stages of the loss of his wife, played by Bridget Monaghan. And, of course, John Wick, played by Keanu Reeves, has passed away from cancer or something. And so, like, after the funeral and stuff, he gets a knock on the door, and there's the last gift from his wife is a puppy, because she's like, I don't want you to go through this alone. You need to love again. At this point, we don't know his backstory yet. But, you know, and he has a badass 1969 Mustang Mach 1 that he's out riding around with his dog, and these Russian gangsters tries to buy his car off him, and he's like, not interested. So these young punks follow him home, beat the shit out of him, kill his dog, and steal his car. And then we find out John Wick is the boogeyman.
Yeah. They thought they were knocking off someone, some random guy, and he turned out to be the absolute worst person on the face of the earth for them.
Yeah, because basically he was the top-of-the-line, like, most feared hitman in all of New York, if not the world. But when he met his wife and fell in love, he retired and tried to live the simple life until someone brought him back in.
Yeah, who, ironically, worked for the father of the young man that broke into his house and beat him up and killed his dog and stole his car.
Yeah, and after they kill his dog, they take him to the chop shop to get, you know, new VIN plates and paperwork and stuff on it. And we run into John Leguizamo's character Aurelio, and he's the first one where he's like, "Who's like, where'd you get this car? Oh, we just stole it off some loser." Did you at least kill him? No, but we fucked up his dog. And he's like, really? And just punches him in the face. And he's like, get the fuck out of my shop. And they're like, why? They're like, we own you. He's like, get the hell out of the shop. Like, you know, well, you know, Vigo's not going to be happy with you punching his son. He's like, Vigo will understand. And then sure enough, like, Vigo calls. And he's like, I heard you hit my son. Yes, sir, I did. Why is that? Because he stole John Wick's car. And he's like, oh. And just hangs up the phone. It's like... And then we get the whole great scene with Vigo and his son, and the right-hand man played by Dean Winters, who anybody knows from the Mayhem insurance commercials.
Was it State Farm?
Yes.
But he's like, you know, beats the crap out of his son and is like, you know, we used to call him, was it?
Baba Yaga.
Yeah. Like, the boogeyman? Not exactly. He's the guy we hired to kill the fucking boogeyman. And what's that? He's like, John Wick is a... He's like, well, let me just kill him. He's like, you can't. He's like, how did he put it? He's focused.
He's a man of focus and determination.
Determination and
like
sheer fucking will. I once saw him kill three guys with a pencil.
In a bar fight. Yeah. Yeah. Like, with a fucking pencil. How can anybody do that?
And the whole time you're seeing this, you're seeing him.
And the best part is, it's in Russian, so they've got these emotive subtitles.
Yeah. Where it's like highlighting.
Showing, this is the part where you should pay attention.
And like the whole time that you're getting this description of who this guy used to be, you see him back at his house with a sledgehammer, breaking up the concrete, and you know, pretty much metaphorically unlocking his old life that has been sealed away and pulling out his box of mini guns and gold coins. Which I really wish
lots
I had one of those.
And lots of gold coins.
Yeah.
You will see those again.
So. Yes.
note that.
Yes. Yeah. I need to figure out how I acquire gold currency.
Well, we need to go
easy.
To the
Continental. $1,500 a coin. I looked it up after the first movie.
And I like how, you know, Viggo, you know, before all the, he tries to call and calm him down. He's like, yeah, we can handle this like men, John. It was just a click. And he's like, what'd he say? He said enough. And it's like, yeah. So they make the mistake of trying to kill him. And I do like the whole, like, suiting up montage of him, you know, taking off his street clothes, putting on the black on black suit. I mean, black shirt, black tie. That's a badass look.
I mean, I was almost waiting for Johnny Cash's Man in Black to start playing at that moment. Like,
I actually thought he was going to pull out the sunglasses with a little neuralizer. Oh, wrong movie. I'm sorry.
He did not have a trench coat.
Yeah, there's no Matrix trench coat moment.
I meant from Men in Black.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, that, I mean, and I like how, because we start slowly introducing this whole criminal underworld of New York, where there is rules, and not only, and when we get to talk about the second movie, it's even goes even deeper into that, but I love the concept that there's this whole criminal underworld, and there's a infrastructure set up to support this world. Like I said, there's this hotel that is only for criminals to come in. You know, resupply, and because no business is allowed to be happen on the property, so it's a place where a neutral ground, almost like in the Highlander. You know, the Continental is holy ground. You can't do anything here. You know, you can come here, you can drink, you know, discuss stuff, but you know, this is like the safe zone. And
yeah, even two mortal enemies can just sit there and have a drink together.
Yeah, because the rules of the Continental, there is no, you know, business on club property.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things I really liked is, you know, you hear the stories of, you know, old crime syndicates and, you know, old, you know, gangster era where, you know, you might have, you know, a mob in building A and a mob in building B, but there is that, you know, sacred rule and level of respect that you just don't get when it comes to, you know, just straight, like, street gangsters and stuff like that.
Yeah, this is old world gangster where there's rules to the game. Like, you know, there's, you know, it's almost like samurais. There's a sense of honor. You know, they may be doing bad shit, but there's rules you don't cross and you know, rules of how you play the game. And even before that, like after our first action sequence of the movie, when the 12 guys break into his house and you get to see the first instance of gung fu where he just kills everybody and then calls or when the police shows up. And it's one of those things where like even like government people knows this organization exists, and because it has rules and takes care of its own, they're just like, we're not going to fuck with these people. So the cop shows up and like looks in, there's bodies everywhere. We've got a noise complaint. He's like, yeah, sorry about that. And he's like, looks around. He's like, you back to working, John? He's like, just working through some things. He's like, okay, see you later. Yeah. You got this?
Well, I mean, I'm almost wondering, like, you know, with, I mean, these guys, I mean, they've got a, you know, host of hotel chains and stuff like that, you know, of neutral ground. Like, how many of these agencies are on the payroll? Like, hey, if you need a body cleanup, this is the company we use. Or, you know,
I was about to get into that. Yeah, exactly.
Go ahead, talk about that. That was one of the interesting things of it.
Right after the police officer, who obviously knows who John Wick is, knows what he used to do for a living, and asks, you know, tells him, are you working again? No, I'm just handling some things. He goes to the phone and calls in a dinner reservation for 12.
Yeah, I just like that. You call the concierge at the Continental and they take care of that. I need to call in. This is John Wick. Yes, that John Wick. I need a dinner reservation for 12.
And they, you know, he didn't give an address. They know who he is. They know where he lives. And they send like this 4-man cleaning crew and they pretty much just wrap up all the bodies.
shine in the van. Yeah.
Wash the windows, polish the floors, and patch the holes in the walls.
Yeah, I mean, it's a full service company. I mean,
and he just pays them with a gold coin for each body.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, there's this whole...
It's its own speaking currency.
Speaking of, like, you know, infrastructure, like, they have their own, like, you know, currency in this world, too, that, you know, and a coin... There's really no value on the coins. It's like, a coin can pay for your drink or a hotel room or body cleanup. It's just...
It pays for some... for one thing, whatever that thing happens to be.
And you'll notice when he pulled all the guns out of his case, he had a lot of gold coins. He had earned some currency in his day.
Like, I don't know, that was one of the coolest things, you know? I mean, just the sheer sophistication, the organization behind it.
And so when he decides to go back to the life, he goes to New York, and we get our first scene of the Continental, which, the concept of the Continental was probably one of my favorite things in there.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, yeah.
He's like, that's the hotel I would like to go stay.
Yeah. And the guy,
without, you know, killing people.
I don't remember the actor's name, but the guy who played the concierge, like the hotel man, he was cool as shit through the whole movie. And he's like, don't worry, yeah, we've had a facelift, but it's still under the same management. And then there's this whole, like, underground spy gangster, or hitman gangster, like speakeasy
kind of thing.
In the basement of the hotel.
Where, you know, to get in, you need to pay a coin, because it's only for the members of this club. Yeah. Club being... hitmen people that do gangster shit.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think that's kind of cool, too. You just show up and, hey, is the manager in? Oh, he's always in.
I have never known him not to be.
Yes. And I do love Ian McShane, who plays Winston, the owner, manager of the Continental. And he's so proper, you know, he's like, but he's trying to do things within the rules of the organization, but he also kind of has a soft spot for John Wick. Cause you know, he's like, you know, the rules, can't discuss business on club property. So go have a drink. And cause he goes in there trying to find out where Yosef, played by Alfie Allen is. And, you know, sure enough, you know, John goes and orders a drink, and written on the napkin is the red circle where they've hidden him in this nightclub to kind of use it as bait. He's like the bait for the trap, because they were like, oh yeah, we're just going to fill this nightclub full of hitman and we'll take out John Wick when he comes.
But then...
I just found it. His name is Lance Riddick, who's the gentleman that runs... who's the concierge there at the Continental.
Yeah, I want to see him, like, fuck somebody up in, like, a future. Like, out, like, yeah, he's, like, some kind of super badass.
Yeah, I would totally believe that, actually.
I mean, at least you know... that the guy's good with dogs.
Yeah.
Like,
we're getting ahead of ourselves.
So, you know, anybody that's good with dogs is probably a pretty good person.
Exactly. The dog knows.
I just love the fact that, like, they all know there's some gangster shit going on, but they still, you know, talk about normal thing. Like, you know, they have, like, code words for it all. It's like, I know what you're talking about. You know what I'm talking about. But let's just keep up the illusion that... That we're on the up and up here. So it's like, yeah, guns, booze, whatever you want, you know, they can get it. But, you know, they all have, like, very, you know, yeah, send up room service. And is the hotel doctor in? But I gotta say, the Russian nightclub scene. When you see, Nash? It's like the second time he's played a Russian mafia guy is the guard of the club, and there's, like I said, John Wick walks out of the freaking shadows and sticks a gun to his head. It's like the boogeyman literally just appeared out of nowhere, and he's like, "Are you working tonight, John?" He's like,
"Afraid so."
He's like, "Very well, sir." And he's like, "You should take the night off." "Thank you, sir." And then he just unplugs his mic, and he's like, "Nope, these guys are on their own."
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was, you know, once again, like, there's that level of mutual respect and
professional courtesy,
you know?
Yeah, he's like, I will kill everybody if I have to, but I don't. And speaking of video games, like, I do love the whole, like, underground pool area in the club. But this reminded me very much of trying to get Silent Assassin rating on Hitman game, because he starts off, like, very quietly taking out the guards with knives and stuff, and then somebody happens to walk out and see him, so he ends up killing every motherfucker. That's how every game of Hitman started for me, because I would try to sneak through and only take out my target to get that silent assassin rating. But as soon as I got caught, it was like, we're shooting everybody.
No man left behind.
I mean, there's a concept of movie, some of these modern movies that they call gamifying movies, where it's, you know, they have this procedure, like a lot of these action games do, where you mow through underlings left and right, then you get to mini boss one, which is pretty much where we are at this point in the movie.
Yeah, because
I mean, we're the, you know, and I almost...
I've got him cornered in the bathroom. I'm going to kill him here. And then it just completely goes to shit.
And then he ends up, you know, going face-to-face with, like, the head security guy.
Yeah, mini boss one.
Yeah, like, runs out of ammo and has to get in a big fight with him.
Gets shot at this point.
Yeah, so, yeah, that was the mini boss level. But, and, you know, to also kind of, you know, Star Trek it, he's literally mowing through, like, red teams shirts. And teams of red shirts. Like, all the security guys have red polos on, or at least in the club.
That's true.
And almost like the video game, too.
They all had red shirts on.
Through the levels, the opponents change.
And they get a little bit better.
Yeah, there's, like, suit guys in the ground level. We get the red shirts on level 2, and then you get the mini boss on level 3. Yeah, if you see a med pack, and you know bad shit's about to happen.
Yes. Oh.
And, like, the, you know, Russian guy running through the club with a towel, because bad stuff, that's like a... Heard like Dave Attell like saying one time, he's like, came out of a club and saw a naked man like running down the street, just, you know, flinging there. If like, and I ran with him. Like, if you see a naked man running down the street, you run with that man, because there is some scary shit coming the other direction.
This case was true.
Yes, absolutely.
And the whole thing is like, this is everyday life to him, because it's not like some action movies where the hero is going through and he's just freaking berserker barrage raging it out. He very quiet and calm through the whole sequence. I mean, this is just, you know, life to him.
Like, there were, you know, I was almost comparing, like, thinking back more comic books and stuff to the Punisher, and how the Punisher just goes on, you know, pure vengeance and everything else. But, you know, that's kind of the thing about John Wick is, you know, he's cool, calm, and collected. Like, you can tell he's a professional because everything just comes second nature.
Yeah, he's like, there's no, like, really, I mean, later in the movie, after he gets, like, a setback or two and gets closer to his target, he starts, you know, the rage starts to come out of him a little. But through these first couple of, like, action sequence, it's pure, he is, like, ice cold. It's like, there's no, his face is completely, like, blank. He's like, you know, this is just, you know, reflex at this point. Like, there's no, like, emotional response to what I'm doing here. It's like, these people need to die, and
basically
that's how it's going.
It's one of those things when you've done this same thing so many times over and over again, you put it away for a while, and then you do it again, and it's just like automatic.
And I saw when I was looking up the guns that he used in the movie, you know, in this movie, his sidearm is the H&K P30L and a Glock 26. But at the end of the article I was reading about the guns he used, there was like these infographics of each fight, how many people he killed, how many headshots he got. And like at the end, like the total, it was like 77 kills, 86% accuracy rating. I mean, that's like badass shit right there.
But I mean, I had
me looking at infographic right now, and in the nightclub, like, it was 28.
Yeah.
But I love the fact,
and the number of headshots too.
With 23 headshots. Like,
yeah. Well, I mean, I love the fact too that, you know, so many movies you see the, you know, main character run around and he's just shooting people, leaving them wounded or whatever. But John Wick, no, it's two to the chest, one to the head.
Yeah, like, that whole like failure drill, like making sure that, and even the people that he's like knocked down and stuff. You know, when he gets a chance, he turns around and finishes them to go about his business. He's not a guy that's going to get shot in the back by some dude he thought was dead.
Yes, and amazingly, I don't think he shot a single bystander.
No.
Was hit. And I'm not sure that bystanders were... He shot a bystander.
No, I mean, Russian guy grabbed one of the waitresses, kind of using her as a shield, he backed off. It's like, he's a professional, there's rules. You don't do collateral damage.
Yeah. I mean, someone comes in and does a running gunfight through a crowded nightclub for no one other than the people with guns to get hit with a bullet is shocking.
I mean, like I said, his accuracy rating is insane.
Not a guy I want to go against. Nope. Not at all.
Just the mechanics of his shooting, too. I like how, you know, when he does that whole, like, flips the magazine out when he's going to reload. And I mean, he's just so quick and precise about it.
Well, artist, it's like I said, a big, what is it, expressive dance of the gunfight.
Didn't he do a lot of three-gun matches and stuff like that, too, leading up to the films? And
yeah, leading up to the film, and then especially with the second one, he was training with Terran Tactical Innovations was the people that were doing a lot of his gun training, and end up the guns he used in the second movie when we get there, they're the ones who built those guns. So it was almost like an ad for for their equipment. But yeah, like I said, you go on YouTube and watch the videos of him shooting like these three-gun matches in preparation, and he is badass legit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of been the thing, you know, like, you know, Keanu Reeves for the, you know, I think this is really his niche. There's been a lot of other films that he's been in that I didn't necessarily think he, you know, quite, you know, that was the role for him. But, I mean, dude, when it comes to John Wick, like, it's just been spot on.
Yeah. This is
this is like the seventh or eighth time he's played a guy named John. So he's typecast as a guy named John.
Basically. But, you know, it's a franchise that Johnny can probably Utah, take him a little John Constantine. A little further in.
Oh yeah, he absolutely.
Just run this franchise for a couple more movies just because
it was a surprise success. I mean, the first one was $20 million, made $88 million, which is not huge, but when you look at the numbers for the next one, it's $40 million, made $144 million. So it's like,
so far.
Yeah.
Because we haven't even gotten into, it's still in the theaters as we record this. It has, so there's still DVD sales and pay-per-view and all that other stuff that'll come afterward.
But yeah, I like when, you know, eventually, yeah, of course, kid gets away. So John goes and burns down his daddy's stash house to lure them in so he could, you know, go after them when they come in to recover it. And he ends up getting, like, they can't shoot him. They end up having to hit him with a car to, like, finally put him down and, like, capture him for a little bit.
And the car driven by Mini Boss 1, by the way.
But I do like the, once they have him tied up and they're finally able to do the face-to-face with him, that's really the first time you see him lose his cool. Where he's like, you know, the guy's like, you did all this for a fucking dog. And he's like, I did it for a fucking dog. Like, my wife died, and that dog was like the last gift to me. She gave me hope that, you know, I could recover and go on. And your son stole that from me. So you can either give me your son, or you can die fucking screaming right next to him.
And then they put a plastic bag over his head.
Yeah. But then, of course, we haven't talked about his buddy Marcus, William Dafoe, who you think is, you know, been hired to kill him. Because, you know,
who has been hired to kill
Viggo
him at this
point. Puts a bounty on his head. So you got him coming after him, but he keeps seeing missing or hitting the people trying to kill John. So you don't know if he's just a really bad sniper or he's actually, you know, one of the good guys.
Well, I was almost through glass, you know, bullet deflection.
Well, I mean, I was almost thinking, like, you know, all right, so, you know, obviously there's this, you know, hit, and you assume there's probably teams of people working together, like, hey, us three can take down John, we'll split the proceeds or whatever. And, you know, so I thought this was kind of a way that this guy could eliminate any other competition or anything.
And speaking of which, teams, we haven't talked about Miss Perkins yet, played by you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. star Adriana Palicki.
Have we really gotten it? She hasn't really done anything yet, though, has
well,
she?
Well, like, I think before, it's like the right after he does the warehouse thing, before he goes to the
burn down
the stash house, she attacks him in the Continental.
We actually completely skipped that.
Yeah, because, like, you know, they're like, we have a contact. She's, like, willing to break the rules of the Continental, and he's, like, double the price. So she actually attacks him in the safe house. And it's one thing that's cool about it, you know, you have a female, you know, bad guy, but they don't pull any punches. They beat the shit out of each other in that fight.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's there's no, like, holding back, oh, I can't hit a girl. Yeah. You know, he, like, wraps a sheet around her head and, like, beats her into the wall a couple times, and hey, it's brutal.
Hey, when lives are on the line, there's no, I can't hit the woman.
But he doesn't
try to kill me.
He's like, you know, you're not on my list. You're just being a dumbass. I'm going to knock you out and tie you up. But, yeah, and I do like, you know, the hotel concierge calling, oh, we've had some noise complaints, sir. It's like, yeah, sorry, I'm having to deal with an uninvited guest.
Oh, should we, do you need anything? Perhaps a dinner reservation?
Yes.
We'll see.
That part was hilarious.
Yeah. It's like, could I'm still deciding whether or not I'm going to kill her.
Oh.
Room service.
But yeah, you know, he battles through all these guys and eventually gets his target. He's like, it's all done. I'm done. This is what I came for. I'm going to go back to retirement. And, you know, even calls Vigo to be like, you know, you can make the arrangements now. Like, I'm done. But he finds out that, of course, Marcus has been helping him all this time, which kind of violates the rule of the organization. So Vigo has to go kill Marcus and call John and brag about it. So,
yeah,
John's like, I'm not retired yet. I got one more on my list. I'm going to have to take out Vigo.
Yeah, he accused William Dafoe's character of essentially not following through with the contract while it was still valid. So if he had done his job, his son would still be alive. So obviously a little bit peeved about that.
Yeah, because he doesn't really blame John at this point. He's like, John's going to do what John's going to do, and I understand.
But you were supposed to do this.
But yeah, if he had killed John when he had the chance, he would not lost his son. And I do like at this point, you know, he kind of leaves Miss Perkins there to ambush him when he comes to the house, but she gets called to the carpet for what she did at the Continental. And I love it. She shows up, and when we get into the final scene of John Wick 2, it's the same park that he gets called to at the end.
Not jump ahead.
But yeah, she comes in, and there's, of course, Winston. He's like, your membership has been revoked, personally, and just walks away, and these guys just come out and just light her up, and then there's the cleaning crew just standing by. So there are definitely consequences to violating the rules of the Continental.
Oh, I mean, I think that's the way that, you know, the only way rules can remain intact is if you enforce them, and there's dire consequence.
Yeah, if you don't tell people this is what happens when you break the rules, if you don't follow through with them, what do you have? Especially when you have a pile of people who kill other people for a living. Yep. There have to be serious consequences involved.
Yeah, she got lit up. But then, of course, you know, he goes after... I do like the final scene where he's chasing Vigo in the car and like the bodyguards and the right-hand man's all freaking out. And Vigo's back there like having a drink and laughing. He's just like, oh, shit. He's like, he knows he's fucked at this point. He's just enjoying watching John work, you know? He's just like, in fact, the one guy's like, does anybody have a gun? And he like hands him a gun. He's like, here you go. Good luck with that.
And he like pulls it away, like a little keep away. Here's a gun. Oh, ho. Yeah, you can't get it.
You got to be quicker than that.
Yeah, and they have their epic fight. And
it's like, basically, if you didn't take the gun, you would have lived through this whole thing.
Yeah.
He's not after you.
No, but he was a dumbass. He was mayhem and
mayhem.
Got mayhemmed because he got ran the fuck over. And then, of course, John breaks into a veterinary's office to get medical supplies and finds a pit bull that's scheduled to be executed. And he's like, all right, I need another dog. You can come with me.
You're my new puppy.
And the thing is, like, all the dogs in there are, like, barking at him except him. He's just sitting there chilling. So he's like, all right. And then walks off in the sunset with his new dog.
And now we're at the end of John Wick 1.
So from here on out, kind of spoiler alert, we're going to get into John Wick Chapter 2.
2017's John Wick Chapter 2, directed by the same directing pair.
And this one, like clap sync almost?
Yeah, and like I said, this movie literally starts out, I think they say, 3 or 4 days after the first movie, because he never did find his car in the first movie. So we start this one with him finishing his night of mayhem and going to get his car, which is in a Russian warehouse run by Vigo's brother, who is Peter Stormari, who is, anyone remembers Bad Boys? He was the Russian Grim Reaper. And I love it because there's such a connection to the first movie, because like his right-hand guy is like, why are we giving up all this stuff? Because they're trying to get it. They're like, we're closing operations. We're getting the hell out of here because John Wick's coming. And they're like, why? It's over a car and a dog. And he starts telling literally the same story that his brother told to Yosef in the first movie about, you know, John Wick, he's a man of focus and commitment and sheer fucking will. I once seen him. He's like, yeah, I know. Kill 3 guys with a pencil. He's like, yeah, a fucking pencil.
Well, then he goes to say that everything you've heard has been toned down about John Wick.
Yeah, if anything, the stories have been watered down. And, of course, you know, our first cigar in the movie, too. He's smoking God of War. God of Fire Kalito. And there's even a box of Eye of the Shark on the table. So even though he is very bad at cutting it and cracks the wrapper when he goes to cut the cigar.
Just as a side note, if you have the opportunity to smoke a God of Fire cigar, they're amazing smokes. They are not cheap.
No, but of course,
they're amazing
smokes. Russian mafia guy. You got to smoke the good stuff. But yeah, but that, I got to say, since these guys, this is really their second movie they've directed. Like with the first one, I think it was more like, hey, let's see if we can make a movie. And then the second movie, oh shit, we've made a movie, so now this one has to be different. Let's kind of experiment with our visual styles and whatnot. So there's a lot of like kind of more artistic camera angles and stuff where they tried to get a little bit more artistic with this movie, but still kept it that
you know, same
hardcore gun-fu thing, except for this first fight scene. This first fight scene was a little weird because basically it's like car kung-fu. They're hitting them with cars and
I'm not sure if it's a chop shop or a taxi depot.
Yeah. But yes, yeah, they're using like New York taxis to smuggle like
yeah. Since money New York City, if you've ever been to New York City or you live there, if you haven't been listening to this in New York, you know that these yellow cabs are literally everywhere. They don't raise any suspicion. So what a better way to smuggle your drugs and your gold around town with these taxi cabs?
I do like the gold coins are kept in these really nice looking humidors. I kind of want one of those humidors now.
Yeah.
You take the humidor, I'll take the coins.
Yeah, so the rest of the action sequences are very true to the original, but for this opening action sequence was just a little bit over the top with their hitting them with cars and stuff. And
even before that, the whole, you know, 5-minute chase of, you know, him and, you know, with the motorcycle and everything was
getting the key to the the stash house there. But yeah,
you start the movie wondering, what is he doing?
Yeah. But then they eventually... I do like it starts off, there's a projection of an old movie stunt sequence where there's a motorcycle crash. And you're hearing the sound effects of the crash. Then you see an actual motorcycle come rolling, like crashing down the street. And it goes right into the, you know, John Wick action sequence. But yeah, you know, he wastes everybody, gets the main guy, pours him a vodka. And he's like, I got my car. Killed your people. Let's have peace. And the guy's like, all right, enjoy your retirement. I'm gonna do what Vigo did, and I'm going to take my shot and go the fuck away.
Yeah, you want peace? I don't want to die, so we're good.
Enjoy your retirement. And sure enough, he goes back home.
It's pasiva.
puts the gun case away, pours new concrete, and he's prepared
just
to go back
chilling
to
with
his,
the dog. You know, I mean,
his life. And then somebody has to knock on the door.
Why the fuck do you want to continue to open the door? Like, nothing good can come from it.
Yeah, Santini D'Antonio or something like that, played by Richard Scamaro. And basically, they told the story in the first movie that when John wanted to leave the mafia, he's like, all right, you can leave, but you got to do this impossible task. And he did it, so he earned his way out. Well, apparently, he had to ask a favor when he was doing this impossible task, and the club, because it's like I said, this movie, what I liked about it is it delved a lot more into the secret underground of this shadow organization and the Continental. And apparently there's like markers they give out, which is a blood oath. It has like John's fingerprint in blood in it saying that, you know, I owe you a favor no matter what it is. And he comes in, he's like, time to pay up. And he's like, I'm retired. I ain't going to do it. And he's like, and so he blows up John's house.
Yeah, apparently.
With a freaking grenade launcher. Yeah. Like.
Well, apparently refusing a marker and in this society is pretty much a death sentence. You gave it, you need to honor it, or the person is welcome to kill you.
Yeah, because he goes back to the Continental and talks to Winston, and he's like, hey, what the fuck? And he's like, hey, you refused the marker, man. He's like, you tried to break one of the only two unbreakable rules in this organization is, you know, you do not kill. You do not kill
no
on this. No business on this property, and you cannot refuse a marker. And he's like, if you refuse the marker, you die. If you try to kill the owner of the marker, you die. If you run, you die. So just go do whatever he wants you to do, and go back to your life.
Yeah. So then he goes back to the guy. He finds out what the marker, what he wants done, which is basically to kill one of the new heads of the organization.
Yeah, which happens to be his sister.
Yeah, apparently there is a high table, and his sister has taken their father's place on the council, and he wants her taken out so he can ascend to his rightful spot as he believes.
And I think that puts him like in control of all of New York or something, right? Like,
yeah, pretty much. Or it, you know, he'll be able to take over New York once he's in the council. So, and then of course, like, yeah, before John goes out on his shenanigans, he's like, do y'all board dogs here? And of course, you know, the concierge is like, I will take care of it myself.
And that, does he have a name?
No. Not yet. He's a dog. but yeah, then he has to go to Rome, to the Rome Continental. And so we get a whole, like, you know, international version of the same. We find out there's not just one continental. There's continentals all over the world.
Yeah. Multiple and, continental. Just like any, just like your Marriott hotel chains, yeah. Except.
And we meet Julius, who is the basically the Winston of Rome. And I love that sequence when he's like, I don't remember the last time I saw you here, John. So you got to ask. I got to ask one question. He's like, what is it? Are you here for the Pope? And he's like, no. And he's like, all right, then go about. Here's your room. As long as you're not here to kill the Pope.
Well, probably a devout Catholic. You know, yeah, please don't kill my Pope.
Don't kill the Pope. That's the third unbreakable rule of Gun Club is
don't kill the Pope.
Don't kill the Pope.
Well, I'm sure it's not unbreakable, but please don't do it.
But yeah, then I love from that, probably one of my favorite sequences in the movie is the suiting up. Because he literally lost everything. So he shows up to, you know, Rome with nothing. And he's goes there, you know, he finds like the map maker. They have like a secret map maker. That he's like, oh, here's all the plans to this.
For the catacombs.
Yeah. And then to the, you know, goes into this weird like sweatshop laundry making place. And oh, there's a secret, you know, tailor in the back who makes suits for guys like us. And he's like, yeah, need a new suit. Would it be for night or day? And he's like, I need one for both. And he's like, what kind of lining would you like? Tactical. So it's like they basically make him a bulletproof suit. You know, anybody who's seen Daredevil, it's one of those kind of like the Kingpin edition suits. Yeah, something like
that. But I mean, speaking of the, you know, freaking laundromat, like that he goes into, like to get his suit tailored and everything. Like he drops a gold coin, you know, in one of the people's cup. You know, and you just think she's just, oh, you know, she's stitching suits or whatever the case is. But she turns out to be a legit badass.
Yeah, cause she's like demoing the suit and showing him the bulletproof qualities and stuff. So she's in on it, too.
Yeah.
And then he goes to the, yeah, well, Continental and is like, is the sommelier in? I've never known him not to be, sir. And then there's a, and it's, what's his name from Guardians of the Galaxy and stuff. He has like a really cool, and I like, it's him showing him like the preferred weapons, but they're talking about like their wines,
like so he would be ordering dinner.
Yeah, he's like, I need a tasting, and I like because, like I said, H&K was his gun in the first film, and since, like I said, since he did all his training at Terran Tactical, this was pretty much like their
advertisement for their guns.
Yeah, so it's like, I know you prefer the German varietals, but I can fully endorse what the Austrians are doing, and he's like Glock 34, Glock 26, and it's the whatever the.
It's like this Terran Tactical Master special package. Which we looked up, by the way. You two can own John Wick's gun for a small total of $1,500 on top of the gun.
Yeah.
I could buy three Glocks.
For the cost of just the upgrade to one. And it's an upgrade, not including the actual gun. Yeah, you need one first.
I mean, I got an extra Glock laying around here. Probably. Yeah, and then he's like, well, you know, what about something... a little more something robust and precise, and he's like, ah, yeah. So he pulls out this thing, tricked out another Terran Tactical AR, and he's like, all right, what about the end of the night? You know, something bold. He's like, I would have to make the Benelli M4. And how about dessert? Oh yes, dessert. And, you know, he pulls out these big box of knives.
I need one of everything.
And I think they did that.
Yes, all the things. Please have it delivered to my room.
And they pretty much, I think, did that whole sequence just to set up a three-gun match for him. Because there's like, you know, once he goes in and takes out his target or, you know, the sister, he tries to escape through the catacombs. And, of course, it's all a setup there, you know.
Well, I mean, he was being spied on and was saw entering the catacombs with a key. So
Ares,
I mean...
Ruby Rose, his, Santini's...
Yes, mini boss number one for this movie.
Yeah. His head of security, you're like,
oh no, mini boss number two.
We're tying up loose ends, so yeah, they're you know, you've completed your task, your mark is done, but now we're gonna kill you.
Oh, we need to skip a part. After he kills the sister, he comes across who I call dub mini boss number one,
yeah,
Common, who is playing Cassian, the head of security for the system.
And I just like that conversation they have. It's like, "Are you working, John?" He's like, "Yep." He's like, "Has it been a good night?"
Unfortunately.
And then they gunfight ensues. I love he runs up on the at this party, and he runs up on the stage and caps a guy, and everyone cheers for a second. They're like, "Part of the show, sweet."
Yeah, everyone at that party knows the score, though.
Yeah.
You're not going to this party without knowing what's going on.
But I thought it was, just kind of as you were talking about the sister, was she dead before, he actually, puts the bullet in her head?
She was mostly dead.
I didn't think he even shot her. I thought she just bled out.
He shot her at the very end, after she's already in the tub.
I think she is dead because he reaches in and grabs her hand.
And holds her hand there as she dies.
And then he lets go and she just slips back into the waters. I'm pretty sure.
I mean, technically.
He waited until she went out the way she wanted to go out.
Technically, he didn't kill her so much as influence her death.
Yeah, she knew there's no way out, but she was going, "I'm going to go out my way."
Because I was waiting on her to,
fight.
She's got the knife, and, I'm waiting on her to, make a quick movement and try to, take him out or something, but nope. Instead, we get Filet of Sister.
But yeah, but once he gets into that fight, when he gets ambushed in the catacombs, if you watch that sequence and then watch the 3-gun training matches he did, it's almost the same sequence.
Oh, it's exactly the same.
Yeah, it's like, if you'd seen that video on YouTube, you're like, "Oh, this is the real version of what they were showing him practicing." Because it's the same gun, almost the same shot sequences and stuff, with a few little gung fu moments twisted in here and there.
With some hand-to-hand, since it's actual people involved. But yeah, you went through the rifle, went through the pistol, went to the shotgun, and back and forth as he needed to. And before he even got to the catacombs, they showed him staging these weapons.
Pretty much as he was in
his 3-gun
match. Because, like I said, you have your guns set up in the stage where you need to use those guns. So yeah,
you don't carry all of them with you the whole time.
Yeah, anybody who's
it's
watched
there
that kind
as
of
you go.
Competition is it's pretty much a live action version of a 3-gun match.
Yeah, here I need to be quiet. Here I need a lot of magazine capacity and rapid fire rate, and then here I just need whatever this bullet touches to just fall.
And it's transitions too when he's going from rifle to pistol and back, and with the same with the shotgun. It's very smooth. It's a very practiced technique.
And the videos we all saw on YouTube showing these training sequences. That's indicative of the kind of training he went through. It shows in the finished product with the movie. It looks like he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
As opposed to somebody that doesn't know what they're doing and just trying to go through the motions on scene.
And I do after he escapes or thinks he escapes, he runs back into Common because he's like, "I have a personal vendetta now because you killed the person that I was supposed to be protecting." And they get into a whole fight sequence and eventually way into the Continental, and they're like, "Oh, sorry, we're back on holy ground. We can't fight anymore. Let's go have a drink."
"Hey, gentlemen, how about the bar? Maybe you two can, have a drink."
Yes, sir. "You take gin and tonic, right?"
It's they know each other's drinks.
These two guys know each other.
And he explains it. He's like, "Hey, I had a marker." And he's like, "Yeah, you had no choice, but you killed somebody close to me. I can't let this stand. So, I paid for the drink. Consider it a professional courtesy. I'll be seeing you, John."
"I'll make it easy. I'll make it quick." "Well, thank you for that.
I'm not sure I can return the favor."
He's like, "I'll try to do the same." Oh, and of course, since he gets away, they put a $7 million bounty on him.
The brother puts $7 million
on him. And I love how Winston comes in. He's like, "Here, sign the ledger that the mark has been fulfilled. If he comes after you now, it's not against the rules. You're the dumbass who started this." And his whole thing is you've realized what I've done. You poked the devil and pulled him out of hell and then burned down his temple. What do you think is going to happen?
Actually, my favorite part was seeing the whole procedure of how they did the contracts.
Yeah.
Where they called into this old school
the operator and she's switch,
and she's and she looks like a tattooed pinup girl and she's there typing on an old typewriter on this bond looking sheet with a dollar amount on it. They send it up these vacuum tubes where they telex it to everybody's phones.
And even the computers are like old, like green screen.
Yeah,
like
old green old CRTs.
It's like, this is a very ancient organization. And like I said, you just see the depth of the infrastructure behind this organization. Oh, yeah. It's like something that's been around.
Yeah, it's a whole agency of connected
people. Kind of reminds me of like Assassin's Creed. It's something that's gone on for generations, and there's no telling how old this organization is.
Well, I mean, I was involved.
Like, I was having flashbacks to Agent Carter as like a lot of that was going down. Yeah,
too.
Like,
some of the old SSR stuff.
But I like when he gets back to New York. Like all the, like I said, the bounty's out. So as he, even as like he, as soon as he arrives in the airport, like hitmen are trying to jump him. And he finally gets these two Asian guys in the bar of the airport, and he kills them with a pencil. We've heard the story of, I saw John Wick kill three guys with a pencil. It's only two guys this time, but it was still impressive watching him kill two dudes with a pencil.
And this text message with the bounty went out to like everybody, any random person that you'd see on the street.
Yeah.
There was a woman pushing a stroller. There was the musician playing a violin. There's this giant sumo-looking guy.
The battle with him and the sumo wrestler.
Oh, that was actually really
pretty
good.
Funny.
Yeah, because there's just like a whole. It's like this whole sequence of him in all these fights, and they're not like finishing one fight, going another. They're jumping simultaneously between the fights.
He's having like a 10-minute fight sequence, except it's against 8 different people at 8 different times in the movie as he's trying to make his way to safety.
And
he eventually makes his way to what appears to be a bum
sitting
before
he ends up in the subway
fighting the subway. Common. I forgot about that.
Yeah, because of course, any good boss battle, you think he's dead, he comes back. So they're having this whole fight, and the most polite gunfight ever, because they both have suppressors, and they're walking through the subway, just no reaction, just kicking pot shots at each other, and no one else around them notices what's going on until they get into the train, and they just kind of wait until the train like
starts
clinking out enough, and then there's this whole knife fight. Where he stabs him in the and he's like, the knife is in your aorta. If you pull it out, you will die. Or you can sit here and live another day. And kind of consider that professional courtesy. Like, I don't have to kill you. I don't want to kill you. I'm just going to give you the choice. You can leave me the fuck alone, or you can pull this knife out and try to kill me and
you'll
die.
And that's, you know, apparently not the first time that John Wick has given that choice, you know, to somebody where you kind of get to choose, you know, sort of your own destiny. You can... You know, make the call and live another day, or continue on, and I'm going to kill you.
Because he walks up to this homeless guy as he's being pursued, and at this point he's like all jacked up, like drops a coin in his cup and is like, take me to him. And he's like, curls up in the guy's garbage pack, and the two guys that are chasing John's like, you see anything? Tap, tap, and like pops them both, and like, cleaner guys are right there. And it's like, apparently there's this whole other organization that's not really part of the big organization. It's like an underground.
It's like a separate kingdom. Because all these leaders seem to have their own little spheres of influence.
And we meet Morpheus, a.k.a. Lawrence Fishburne, playing the Bowery King.
Yes.
Who's basically like the information broker of this, or where he's like, I've got these homeless hitmen like all over the city. I know everything that happens. No one's ever going to sneak up on me again like you snuck up on me.
the story with that was, apparently he was some low-level... you know, red shirt guarding a club or something like that. And John Wick fought him and put a knife in his neck and told him the same line. You can either get that taken care of or you can pull it out and try to keep fighting me, but you'll die right now. So he gave him the choice and he chose to live another day.
I mean,
created this whole kingdom for himself.
Yeah, and I thought it was kind of cool too, you know, going back to... you know, what you would anticipate with New York with the massive amounts of taxis. What else you have? Lots and lots of pigeons. So I thought it was cool that, you know, he had the entire flock of, like, carrier pigeons and
stuff. Yeah, carrier pigeons and apparently homeless guys who are getting massive amounts of gold coins.
Yeah, so you have, like, is that homeless beard or operator beard? I can't gotta run the risk. And, you know, and I love that whole conversation with him. He's like, why the fuck should I help you? I should just take that $7 million on your head right now and go about my business. And he's fine. He's like, you know, he's going to take over New York. So you got two choices. Either you can fight a war and, you know, maybe win, but at the loss of what? Or you can just give me a fucking gun.
Somebody give this man a gun.
It gives him a nice Kimber warrior, but he's like, $7 million gets you 7 bullets. That's all you get. And throughout this movie, you've seen him just throw tons of lead. And this is the first time he's given, like, you've only got 7 rounds to do what you need to do.
The best part was that he had 2 magazines in the box. Yeah, and then he took one away. It's like, 7 bullets?
Yeah, he's used to running these Glocks with extended mags and everything else.
But, then, I mean, everybody that he's taken down, and I thought that was one of the things that was cool, is, you know, limited resources, so what do? You start taking guns off the people that you're killing.
And and a lot of those guys were using 45s, too, so it was kind of funny when that whole sequence, you kept seeing him, like, run out of ammo doing his normal thing. Like, damn it, like, hit a guy with a gun, take his gun, shoot, oh, I found somebody with a 45, let me grab a couple magazines off you, go back, and he just kept running out of ammo through that whole sequence, like, almost like a boss battle in the game when you get to where you have limited resources toward that final battle.
One of those things you just can't shoot your way through because you don't have enough bullets.
And then he gets into the final battle sequence in this, because they're in this museum, modern museum of art, and there's this whole, they call it Reflections of the Soul, where it's all these mirrored panels and stuff. And it reminded me so much of that final fight from Enter the Dragon. This was very much an homage to those old Kung Fu movies, because it very much reminded me of that whole sequence of him fighting in the mirrors.
I can't think of all the names, but there have been several movies that use the mirrored rooms, so you're not sure what's where, to kind of excite the battle scene.
And he has his final standoff with Ruby Rose, Ares' character, and that's one thing too. He did it in several times in the movie where he kills a guy with a knife. And just holds them and stares them in the eyes until they die. I mean, that's some cold-hearted shit. I mean, it's one thing, you know, kill a person and move away, but to kill them and this, like, you know, lock eyes with them and just watch the life, like, run out of their body. It's,
well, that goes back to his
dark shit.
That goes back to his tendency to shoot everybody in the head after he's done, even with he thinks they might be dead, because he wants to make sure that person's not going to keep coming after you.
And she even says, as she said earlier in the movie, or signed, you know, as she's dying, be seeing you, John. And he's like, yeah, probably. So, and of course, you know, his main guy gets away yet again and flees all the way to the Continental, because he's like, it's the one safe place. And John follows him and pretty much walks in, and he's like eating a steak, and he's like, yeah, you know, the food in this place is excellent. Someone could be here for years and never eat the same thing twice. You know, what are you going to do about that, John? And Winston's like, don't do it, John. And John just caps him right in the head, which violated the one unbreakable rule of gun club.
So at this point, John has broken both unbreakable rules.
No,
one, conducted business, but then two, trying to get out of the markers. So.
Well, no, he completed the marker. That was the thing. It's like, the marker's done. I'm free to...
Yeah, but he broke that rule at the beginning of the movie.
But he went back and, like, you know,
made
complete
it right.
The marker, so, you know, and even Winston told him, like, hey, once the marker's complete, if you want to get your vengeance, go ahead, but you got to complete the marker. So, like I said, he was free and clear at that point, but then he violated the rule, goes and gets his dog from, and goes back home, and he's really starting to, like, break down, and that's when, you know, the concierge shows up, and he's like, sorry, Mr. Wick, you know, come with me. And he's like, fully, like, accepting his fate at this point, and he's like, you know, he's like, there's no resistance. He's like, he knows I've fucked up. It's time for me to die. And he takes him to this park, and they have
the park.
Yeah.
From the first movie.
Yeah, it's the exact, except it's daytime now. It's the exact same park where Miss Perkins faced her judgment. I like the conversation they have too, where he's like, you know,
yeah, and this park is this park is full of bystanders. Yeah, everybody,
like,
under the sun.
He's
just
like, I'm, you know, great knowing you. Goodbye, Mr. Wick. They say their goodbyes. I kept waiting for him to say, hey, take care of my dog if something happens. Because he's fully accepted that I'm going to my death at this point.
I'm actually surprised they didn't say that in the movie, too. I was expecting.
Or him even to offer, like, if this goes bad, I'll watch your dog for you, sir. And then, of course, Winston's there chilling. He's like, you know, I you leave me no choice. You know, you're going to be excommunicated, but I'm going to give you an hour before, you know, the council has doubled the bounty on your head. He's like, well, why am I not dead already? Because, you know, he's, like, fully there to, like, you know, face the fight. He's like, because I willed it so. And, like, snaps his finger. Pretty much all these bystanders in the park just stop and turn around and look at him. Just showing how powerful. You think this guy's just a guy who runs a hotel who caters to gangsters. But nobody knows really how powerful he is. Like, he may be, like, the head, like, over the council. You don't know. It's like...
Yeah, but he had, like, 100 people just
walking
around in the park. Like, any park... in a big city, you expect. The park's full of people. It's a nice day. They're just out doing their thing. He snaps his fingers or gives the signal or whatever it was, and the whole park stops in their tracks and looks. like at any point in time, I could have had you killed, but I didn't.
Yeah,
and I think this time too, the contract has gone global, right?
Yeah, he's like, they doubled the price and it's gone worldwide. He's like, and that's when he's like, why am I not dead already?
I mean, $14 million is a lot of money.
But I mean, if you're throwing gold coins around, is it?
Well, like as we said earlier, the gold coins don't seem to have any value outside of this world.
Where the, those you kind of get from, I guess, bonuses or whatnot, but $7 million is probably still $7 million in an account somewhere, or $7 million worth of gold coins, whatever.
Yeah, even $7 million in gold coins is still a lot of those gold coins.
Yeah, so he's like, and I just love it. He's like, I'm giving you an hour. Like, they have this kind of mutual respect where it's like, I understand what you did.
Yeah, I mean,
so I'm not going to treat you like anyone else who has come in here.
Winston likes him.
And obviously violated these rules. But, yeah, so that's bought you an hour. And he also gives him his own marker. He's like, yeah.
You may need this.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, you get that one favor.
Yeah, and then the movie wraps up with John taking the dog, and he's still hurt pretty much from all of this fighting over the last week.
Yeah,
and starts to limp out of the park, and then it turns into a full-fledged run.
Because the phones are all starting to go off, and it's literally like almost all, like everybody in the park, and everybody in New York.
It was cool because you see all of the bums, that are lined up and stuff like that. And once again, you just realize the sheer magnitude of how many people are involved within this organization, and you're like, one man versus the world.
And how it could literally be anybody that's around you.
Everybody's cover is...
They're not some,
No, it isn't
Russian
like,
they're not some Russian tattooed hitman. It's the mom pushing the stroller.
And this is the first time you see him almost man. Scared.
Oh, yeah.
Like I said, nothing has fazed him up at this point, the hundreds of people he's killed. But now he's like, it's me against the world. Which is probably John Wick chapter 3.
He does make the comment that, hey, just put the word out that anybody comes after me, I will kill them. But
yeah, I love that. He's like, I've given you an hour. He's like, all right, I want you to do one thing for me. You tell anyone who's coming for me, they will die. And he's like, I expect nothing less, John, or something like that. He's like, of course you will kill everyone that comes after you. But just in case, take the marker in case you get into some kind of real shit at some point.
Yeah. And that marker that they brought up in this movie will obviously, when there's a sequel, because I think that they've already said they're going to be making a third one.
It's at least a trilogy at this point, if not.
It's got to come back and rear its ugly head, probably at a critical point where he's out of options and there's nowhere else to go, and he's about to die, and he pulls out this marker and uses it.
Either that, or it's going to be that's how he's going to buy his way back into the Continental at some point, like. Calling in my marker, forgive me.
Tell me how I can make this right and get this called off.
Yeah, because excommunicado does not sound like a good thing.
No.
Yeah.
And again, they go back to the scene in the communication center
where
they're doing the whole old school typewriter.
Yeah, and now when you see the phone calls going out to everybody, it's international numbers. They even threw that in there where it's like worldwide area codes going through that thing. So yeah, there's really no place for him to hide anymore because they've taken away, the Continental. So there's no safe ground. There's no support system. You're truly on your own at this point.
Hung out to dry at that point.
Yep. So as we kind of wrap this up, any final thoughts on the Honor cigar here?
Yeah, man. I mean, like I said, I've had this cigar a couple of times now, and for me, I really enjoy this cigar once I start getting into the Maduro section. I like it because, oftentimes, with the complexity of the fillers and everything else to the point you brought up earlier, Norm, sometimes you don't realize how big of a difference the wrapper can make as far as flavor. But this, with just the Nicaraguan binder and filler here, you really get to pick up on the change when it goes from the Connecticut to, Maduro. And
absolutely.
So it really keeps my flavor, my taste buds,
Interested.
Interested, right? Absolutely. So it's not a dull cigar, and it's not a super powerhouse of a smoke either.
I'd call it on the scale of things, in my opinion. I guess I'd call it like a medium. It starts off mild, medium, works its way up to a solid medium as you work your way through the Maduro sections of the cigar.
Yeah, if the strength doesn't pick up, the flavor does.
But the flavor is solid and consistent almost all the way through. The strength does take a little bit of increase as it changes wrappers. But overall, I mean, I really like the cigar. And I'm generally a fan of CAO's, you know, special releases where they take an existing blend they've got and tweak it some.
We've talked about it before. You know, to your point, the Rabbit Reindeer, which is the MX2 hopped up with just a little bit more Ligero.
A couple years ago when they came out with their Christmas cigars, the Nasty Nutcracker, the Evil Snowman, and the Santa. They take the, all of those
bad
are
Santa,
the Bad Santa. They're all existing cigars that they make. They're their regular production, and they just kick them up with some extra Ligero or something else to give it to tweak it to make it a little bit different.
I still can't bring myself to try the pumpkin spice Halloween cigar.
Except that one, I'm not
so
smoking that one.
Final thoughts on the movie as we go around. Is there a particular highlight sequence character a favorite moment?
I don't. I mean, you know, for me, I think some of my favorite moments involve, you know, the Continental with the concierge and everything. Like just the, you know, the magnitude and level of respect. Like, yeah, you know,
that
and
dude is unflappable.
Yes. You know, no frills. I'm all about business, and you know, to me, like, you just don't see that with a lot of organizations because there's always that constant power struggle.
Yeah.
What about you, Norm?
Honestly, seeing in this movie that they went into the whole depth of what this world actually entails,
yeah,
and it's not just a small little niche thing that happened inside of New York City. It's this worldwide shadow organization that has its own infrastructure, its own resource, its own currency, because even in, we didn't mention it earlier.
Yeah, like when he first goes to see Winston.
The Winston is there reviewing the quality of these coins that are being minted for the organizations. So there is its own. So
yeah, he tells
they're
them,
making,
put them into circulation.
Yeah, it's they've got their own bank. They've got their
own.
It's
their
way
own
of
government,
paying
pretty much
for things.
And I do think it's hilarious that it takes place in New York, which have some of the strictest gun laws in
the
country. But there's
the place
so many
where
assassins.
Nobody has a gun. Nobody can legally have a gun, but everybody's got a gun, and is like this trained kung fu killer.
Yeah, like I said, the highlight to me is because I said I've done 3-gun competitions. I've always been a shooter, you know, and I enjoy that. The precision and the non-Hollywoodness of the gunplay in the movies. It's the only movie I can think of where the weapons tactics are realistic.
Yeah, and if you look at forms and stuff like that, to your point, like that's one of the things that, I mean, us obviously following a lot of veterans groups and law enforcement and pro-military and everything, you hear a lot of people talking about shooting, and that's one of the things, like, Call of Duty and some of the video games constantly get, you know, crapped on because of how unrealistic and so far idealistic things are. But with John Wick, pretty much people's like, that's pretty spot on and pretty accurate.
Not just another
Hollywood rendition.
Yeah. As far as the second movie, I loved how they brought back a lot of the stories from, you know, reference backstories from the first movie, and then Like the story with the pencil. We got to see a version of that. And also, this whole, when he does get, we never talked about the sequence where he does finally get his car back. You're like, why would he go through all this for a car? And then when he opens up the glove box, there's a final letter and, you know, picture of his wife. So it really wasn't, I got to get the car back. It's like, I need this last thing of my wife's back.
Yes.
It made it a little bit more reasonable.
I've lost almost everything that I had of her at this point, but I had this, which was a letter that she wrote to me with a photo of us. And it's another thing we didn't mention. He, in the fight with Common in the underground in Rome, he took a knife to the phone, his cell phone, which had this video.
Yeah, because he had watching
voicemail,
the video.
Was it a voicemail?
It was a video of his wife.
And he lost that too. So
by
the time the movie's
over,
he's lost everything he had at this point.
That's why he's ready to die, because when he goes back to the house, he's trying to clean up the pictures and they're all burned to shit. I mean, he finally finds her bracelet or whatever that he had held on to. But pretty much other than that, he had lost everything at this point.
Yeah.
And with that, we'll be right back.
Welcome to Rome. Is this a formal event or a social affair?
Social.
How many buttons?
Two.
And what style?
Tactical.
Mr. Wick, do enjoy your party.
How good to see you again so soon.
You have no idea what's coming.
You want a war? Or do you want to just give me a gun?
Whoever comes, I'll kill them all.
And now it's time for Blowing Smoke.
And welcome back to the podcast. Well, we've had another one of those celebrity, had a bunch of those celebrity deaths in 2016, and they're just continuing right along in 2017, because we just lost great American actor Bill Paxton.
Yeah, and I gotta say, I was kind of shocked about this one. I mean, he didn't have any significant health issues or anything. It looks like it's just a complication of surgery. So, kind of, sudden and unexpected. And I gotta say, man, we've talked about Aliens, Game over, man, game over. I mean, one of those iconic quotes that's gonna be carried on, for generations from now. And then, one of the movies that I really, really enjoyed, Twister, even though he wasn't necessarily a storm chaser, growing up, I was always obsessed with weather and really just storm chasing in general. It's always been kind of one of my bucket list items was to head out to the Midwest, and actually see a tornado in person and stuff like that. And, it was really kind of cool because Twister was one of those films that really put storm chasing and the science and stuff like that.
And flying cows.
And flying cows, as cheesy as some of it was, and unrealistic at other times. By and large, it, brought a sense of awareness to, a group of, science and, meteorologist and everything else that wasn't getting a whole lot of mainstream attention.
Yeah, before I ever saw those, idiots on the Weather Channel or Discovery or wherever, Twister is the first time you ever say, like, this is something people actually do? Is like, why do you drive into a... no, that sounds like a bad idea. You should probably leave the freaking area when that happens. But there's people out there that, get into the harm's way of a tornado and try to do some science up there.
Yeah, and I thought it was really cool, too, because it was actually a whole lot of storm chasers came together, because of Bill Paxton's passing, and they all turned on their GPS locations, and, even though they were spread out hundreds of miles, managed to, spell out his initials, BP, and I thought that was a really cool homage to... a guy that wasn't necessarily a part of this, science scene or anything, but brought a whole lot of awareness to, some good that they're trying to do as far as, early warning prevention and just understanding more about, climate and the weather in general and stuff. So, from that aspect, I thought it was really freaking awesome.
We're not in Kansas anymore, Toto.
I mean, I can't click my heels together three times.
Yeah, I think Bill Paxton is one of those great, character actors where he's in a ton of the most known movies, but he's never, with the exception of Twister and maybe Frailty, the leading man. He's always, one of these sidekick characters that almost steals the show in every movie he's in.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that just tells the story of how good of an actor he is. I mean, once again, going back to Aliens, he wasn't the most renowned character, didn't have a whole lot of lines, but it was probably one of the most memorable lines.
Yeah, when anyone talks about Aliens, the, Game Over Man is probably like the one quote out of that movie everyone remembers. And, not only that, he has the distinction of being the only man to be able to be killed by a Predator, a Terminator, and an alien. I mean, the big three of '80s sci-fi monsters. He has been killed by all three, because if you watch the original, very first Terminator, when Arnold Schwarzenegger first arrives, there's these three gang members that he has to, of course, he always kills somebody to get their clothes, and one of them is a really weird Bill Paxton with a tread mark across his face for some reason, but made for an interesting tattoo.
Hey man, chicks dig scars and tattoos.
Oh.
Especially of the face variety.
That was one thing when I watched that, whatever, Genesis, where they recreated that scene. It was like, I had to watch it twice to did they really just, use the scene from the old movie? But whoever they got to play, Bill Paxton's character looked, enough like him that I'm like, did they just, use, a young Bill Paxton for this? But no, it was another actor. Yeah.
And I mean, one of them that's more memorable, when we were talking about, stuff from, our birthday years, one of the movies that came up was Weird Science from the year I was born in 1985, where, he played, John Hughes,
Chet, John Hughes is the
director. Well, yeah. Yeah.
But. Yeah, he was the asshole brother who smoked cigars and gave the nerd shit, but he was a memorable character, even though he was a dick through the whole movie. He was freaking hilarious.
Yes.
And I was that movie would not have been the same without, Chet there as their, their rival.
Absolutely.
So. Their nemesis, if you will. And also, like I said, I found a list of the top 10, Bill Paxton movies. Simple Plan, Frailty, which was his horror movie, and of course, number 8, Terminator. Stripes with Bill Murray. I mean, that right there is a freaking classic comedy in itself. And talking about True Lies, as the guy that Arnold Schwarzenegger, again, having to fight Arnold Schwarzenegger, gets killed by the Terminator, and then later he tries to screw his wife and gets, jacked up by the CIA. But probably one of the funniest, little side characters in that movie is the douchebag car salesman that's, trying to seduce his wife.
Yes.
And it's, in this whole, thing, oh, I'm a spy, and you gotta, have sex with me for national security reasons, which, her husband's an actual spy and doesn't realize this shit, so, but he's just a con man, and freaking, it's, his whole little story arc in the movie is just absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, and I mean, even more recently, still got to go back a few years, but, the villain, John Garrett and, Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., bringing it into, TV, so, I mean, he's won a ton of Golden Globes and, everything else, and,
he was great in, was it season 2 or season 3 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., where, it was after Captain America Civil War, where, Hydra had returned, and he was pretty much one of the heads of Hydra at that point, and a former S.H.I.E.L.D. agent.
And I think that was season 2, but I don't remember exactly. They're all running together.
Yeah, but I mean, he made a great villain. Because he was a guy that he was a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent and knew all that. He was one of Coulson's friends even, and it was he was hilariously evil. He was evil, but he was also, he was a wise ass about it, making jokes and just being a general dick.
Yeah.
Number 5, we've got Weird Science, we've already talked about. Twister, we already talked about. 3 was Apollo 13, which, like I said, that, was at the time a, huge advancement in space movies and,
such.
Like I said,
dude, I didn't think that movie was ever going to not be in theaters.
Yeah. And then, of course, number 2 is Tombstone, playing one of the Earp brothers who gets shot in the back with a shotgun while he's playing pool. Yeah, never play pool with your back to the door, man. That's rule number 1.
Shit, we got 3 doors around the pool table. We might need to rethink our strategy.
And of course, their number 1 pick was Aliens. But you know, some honorable mentions that didn't make the list. You know, he was in the original Navy SEALs movie with Charlie Sheen and them, and of course Commando again with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Where any of the one where he's like, I promise I'll kill you last. And he's like, I thought you were gonna kill me last. I lied. And of course, Predator 2 as, you know, one of Danny Glover's partner police officers who gets killed in a subway shootout with a Predator.
You don't want to run into a Predator in a subway.
No.
It's not going to end well. That's probably one of the most iconic scenes from that movie, too. Like, you know, all the subway trains. Like, every time I hop on MARTA or, you know, any kind of mass transit that involves a train, I'm like, have flashbacks to Predator every time there's a tunnel. Like, I'm just waiting on the power to cease.
And anytime there's, like, a bump in the train, you're like, oh, Predator's jumped on the roof. We're all screwed.
And half the time, I don't have any candy. Like, I always, like, I'm going to revert to the innocent kid strategy and want some candy?
Hey, man, Predator will take a bribe. It's all good. So, his massive credits and works. Anything, any particular character or movie that you know, is your favorite?
I mean, it's hard to say, you know? I mean, because some of the most iconic ones, I mean, Aliens, absolutely memorable, and I love Twister that I've already talked about, Weird Science that we talked about, like, I mean, all of them. You know, it's just, it's hard to really say, you know, my favorite. I don't know. For me, I think because, you know, I always wanted to study, you know, meteorology and everything. Twister is probably one of the most iconic. I mean, you know, very blue collar, very, you know. You know, he's battling, you know, the divorce with his wife as, you know, the storm of the century is upon him and everything. And, you know, he has a chance to...
Kind of fitting for a divorce. He's going through a divorce and a storm of the century.
So, I mean, I don't know. You know, I just... Oftentimes, like, I would put myself in that character's shoes and be like, yep, I see myself in a truck finding myself in a bad situation and having to revert a ditch and get my dumb ass stuck. I just hope I got some leather straps.
Yeah. Oh, I got to say for me, like, yeah, I'll always remember him as either Corporal Hicks or Chet from A Weird Science. Because those are probably the two most memorable roles in me, Aliens and Weird Science. But also, you know, Tombstone. Like, Tombstone's probably one of my favorite movies. And he plays, you know, was it Frank or... I know, he's one of Wyatt Earp's younger brother, and when that movie starts off and shit starts going bad, you know, Wyatt Earp, you know, played by Kurt Russell, is like, I'm trying to be retired. I don't want to take up arms. I don't want to be a cop no more. But, you know, his older brother and, you know, his younger brother is like, you know, his older brother's like, we got to stand up for the people of the community. And his other brother's just a, you know, young cocky guy. And he's like, yeah, we got to kick some ass, you know, and stuff like that. And then eventually gets blown away, but... And starts, you know, Wyatt up on a vengeance spree. But, yeah, he, like I said, he did a good job in that movie and was kind of the motivator to get him, you know, back on the side of the law.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, and who was it? Morgan, it was Morgan.
Morgan was who he played, and Virgil was the older brother that played by, what's his name? Friggin' that's in the ranch and everything
Sam
else.
Sam Elliott.
Yeah.
Man, making me, like, dig through the memory banks.
I always think Kris Kristofferson for some reason. Those two, like, look too much alike. It's like, no, it's not Whistler. It's the other old cowboy guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
But with that, we will bid him a fond farewell. Yeah, somewhere over the rainbow.
Hey guys!
Hi!
Check out Rec Level 3.
What's that?
We're a gaming, geek, nerd culture fandom podcast.
Ooh. Wow!
And you can find us every Friday at 11:30 a.m. on reclevel3.com.
Yay!
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30. And welcome back to Cigar Nerds Podcast. It's time for Beer 30.
Absolutely. So, you know, it's hard for me to explain what we have this week.
I don't know what you're drinking because it's unknown.
Literally. So, we are actually drinking the Venture American Stout from Unknown Brewing from Charlotte, North Carolina. So, this is the first beer I've had by Unknown, and... you know, this is kind of an interesting stout because it's no frills. It's, you know, just a good plain stout. I mean, you know, basically they brew the stout with 7 grains and all West Coast hops, you know.
West Coast?
Yeah, so represent. But, you know, I mean, it's got a nice tan head on it. It's we're from the East, man. You're going to start a turf war. Then we're going to have people beefing over turf. But, yeah, I mean, it comes in at 6.5% ABV, you know. It's roasty, it's malty, little touch of chocolate. It's exactly what I would expect out of a decent stout.
Yeah, it's I don't know, maybe not as smooth as some of the other stouts I've had, but it's a stout.
Yeah, and I mean at 6.5%, you can have quite a few stouts.
Yeah, I mean it is a little more hoppy than most stouts. It does have a little bit of a hoppy aftertaste, but it's not overpowering.
No, and I mean, I do pick up on that. Just, it's subtle, but it kind of lingers. I don't know. It's interesting. But, I mean, it's their take. And, I mean, based on what I'm drinking right now, I kind of want to go out and try some of the other beers. We were just kind of perusing the website a little bit. And, you know, it sucks that we couldn't find this one. But they've actually got one called the Dirty Commie Heathen. That I thought was absolutely awesome.
Yeah, it's one of their Russian Imperial Stouts.
Yeah, and then the Rye Felicia. I thought that was pretty cool.
I do like their logo, too. It's a question mark made out of hops and looks like, you know, wheat or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of green.
But, yeah, I mean, it's really good. I mean, it's hard to drag this out because it's simple, but... You know, I'm not disappointed. It's nice for a change. Like, oftentimes we talk about so many beers and there's such complexity and everything else that, you know, you're sitting there trying to digest all the flavors. But here, you're just like, nope, I'm drinking a stout and it happens to be damn good.
Taste the chocolate. Taste the, you know, roast malts. Yep, everything's required to be a stout's there.
Absolutely.
Moving right along. And, of course, their can says, you only have one chance at this thing called life. Take the risk. Go forth. Seek. Challenge and dare. Isn't that like a Eminem lyrics or something? Sounds oddly familiar.
I don't know. I'm not going to bust into any Eminem.
You got to lose yourself. No, I'm not. It's not karaoke night.
I was waiting on it, and I was like, ah.
That's my karaoke jam, but I can't do it without a beat. So what are we going to rate this here unknown stout?
Unknown. The unknown stout gets an unknown rating. Peace. All right, for real. I'm at a 4. I mean,
yeah, sounds about right.
Not a whole lot of bells and whistles, just good drinking beer.
All right, and with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News. A little bit of a. Extensive lineup where we got some shit we're going to talk about, some movies, get into a little bit of video game stuff, and talk about Netflix. Maybe even talk about something called the Nintendo Switch that just came out and kind of get some thoughts.
And been the Baba Yaga.
The what now?
And the Baba Yaga.
Ah, yes. And DuckTales.
It's impossible to say that without doing the woo. It's like... freaking ingrained from childhood.
God, man. Like, it wasn't too long ago we found the video of all the cast doing the intro, and it's like, you have to.
Yeah. Like,
it's ingrained somewhere in our head. But anyway, so we had a little movie come out called Logan. I have not yet seen it, so we're not going to talk about it. But
tune in for next week.
I want to see it. And next week, well... It'll be the week after next when the next episode goes live. But, you know, we will hopefully have some thoughts and some feedback of our own. I'm sure you folks want to hear that. I do. I'm recording this shit. Of course I want to hear it. Anyway, so with no further ado, Deadpool 2, we get a new teaser trailer that's probably not going to be in the movie whatsoever.
But it does have its own Stanley cameo.
Yeah, it does have its own Stanley cameo. Hey, by the way, nice suit.
Shut the fuck up, Stanley.
Yeah, but I just thought it was so fitting. Like, you know, in this era, like, you know, could there really be a Logan film and Deadpool not do some sort of a shenanigan? Like, it is just so ultra fitting. And I love the fact, too, that, you know, it's typical Wade Wilson. Oh, I should probably go help this guy getting mugged, but fuck, I got to get into the suit, and it's taking me a really goddamn long time, and dude ends up dead.
Yeah, it's a very Deadpool thing where he's trying to be the hero. You know, there's some guy getting mugged. He's like, not in my neighborhood, asshole. And then like, but he runs, tries to do the whole Superman thing and run into a phone booth. But anyone who's ever tried to change clothes in a phone booth, it's not that easy. And it takes him like 10 minutes.
I was thinking, you know, they should have painted the phone booth blue and turned it into a TARDIS. That way it'd be bigger on the inside and he'd have plenty of room to maneuver.
Oh, but yeah, and the whole time he's changing clothes, you can hear this guy just getting like the crap beat out of him, robbed in the background. And of course, it's too late by the time he finally gets dressed. He's like, oh shit, I should have just called 911.
What about my cell phone? But, you know, it's funny. The guy's laying dead. There's the groceries. All right, it's kind of sad. The guy's laying there dead. All right, don't want to be too much of an insensitive asshole, but it is Deadpool, so I guess it's fitting. Anyway, you know, Deadpool just, you know, moseys on up, lays his head on his stomach, and, you know, sits there and proceeds to have a very Deadpool-esque conversation about what he should have done, what he could have done. Oh, look, tasty fruit.
And the most important thing, why the fuck is there a phone booth in this day and age? I thought those things were all gone. Yeah, it's like... Commenting, they'll be, you know, breaking that fourth wall type, because that's the what the audience would probably be thinking at this point.
Motherfucking Time Lords.
Yep.
So
the doctor's like, why the hell is this, like, merc in my phone booth? Yeah,
absolutely. So, anyway, I just thought it was cool. I mean, it's Deadpool, it's nerdy. You know, can't have a major Wolverine movie or X-Men movie and... not have, you know...
Yeah, if you can't wait to go see Logan, the Deadpool teaser has been released online officially, so you can go find it on YouTube if you don't want to have to go sit through the trailer of or the opening of Logan.
But why would you not want to?
I'm just saying, some people are patient. They're like, it's going to take me a day to see Logan. I want Deadpool now.
Okay.
RTFN.
But that's not because you don't want to see Logan.
No, it's just you want to see Deadpool sooner.
Okay. Let's just clarify.
Or you're lazy and you don't want to leave your couch.
I think I'm guilty. The couch is quite comfortable. Mm. All right, so moving on from things that are comfortable onto things that are not so comfortable. Anybody that's perused Google Maps lately may have found a place that's just a couple of thousand miles off the coast of Peru. It goes by the name of...
Jurassic Park?
Pretty close. Not too far away. This place is dubbed Skull Island. You know what lives on Skull Island?
Skulls?
Skulls. And big monkeys.
Oh.
But don't let them hear you call a big monkey.
He's an ape.
Yeah. Anyway, we got the final trailer for Kong Skull Island. And the more I see of this movie, the more I'm just like, fuck, I know what I'm doing. I'm going to go see Skull Island.
Yeah, this new trailer
I think it comes out of my birthday,
impressive.
So maybe fitting.
Yeah, I mean, this new trailer, it looks like a pretty interesting movie, and even the monsters that on the island that Kong is fighting, because this is supposed to be part of the whole Legendary Pictures Godzilla multiverse now, so they look a little bit like the monsters from the Godzilla movie.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it's kind of cool, too, because you see a lot of other gigantic monsters and stuff, too, so that only, you know, kind of goes into that whole thing we talked about with the resurgence of the kaiju film genre and everything. I don't know why you're trying to air-draw your pistol into the mic.
I was trying to John Wick it out.
Well, I mean...
And hit the mic.
All right, so we talked about John Wick. John Wick versus King Kong, who wins?
How many bullets does John Wick have? And is the dog helping?
He only had, what was it, $7 million? So what, got him 7 bullets? I mean, but there's a lot of resources. I mean, we've seen some military-esque style helicopters go down. We know that other folks have, you know, went missing. We assume that they're armed. So there could be available resources on the island.
Yeah, I think it's going to take a little bit more than that, you know, 9mm to take down Kong. He may get squished. Just saying.
Unless he dresses up as a beautiful lady.
Pulls a Bugs Bunny and just tricks him by luring him in as a
Well, I mean, you know, that's
woman.
Always kind of been, you know, Kong's downfall. Is he finds a beautiful woman and, you know, she passes out and it's like, oh, that's my princess. I'm going to protect her. How the hell he grasp her and not just crush her, like, I don't understand, but that's kind of been the running gag.
Little so, Feyre action.
I suppose so. Anyway, I'm excited. I look forward to seeing it. Another thing that I look forward to seeing is this little reboot about a show from my childhood called DuckTales.
Woo!
And I still want to find a copy of the old DuckTales game just to try to replay it again because I remember it being next to impossible.
Yeah.
I don't know if my adult hand-eye coordination will, you know, help me prevail at all, but, yeah. You know, it was one of those games that was like...
If nothing were slower now than we were back then... We were in our prime then, and we still couldn't play it.
Yeah, but, I mean, you know, I got to think I've got better motor skills. I mean, compared to 60 frames per second, you know, reverting to 8-bit, you know, maybe. I don't know. I probably wouldn't be able to distinguish the characters nowadays.
Yeah, from that trailer, though, it looks very much like the original DuckTales. And the new voice of Scrooge McDuck with, you know... Doctor Who himself, David Tennant, voicing Scrooge McDuck. It's just awesome.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing. Like, you know, usually we crap on reboots, but this is one that I gotta say I thoroughly look forward to because, I don't know, there's a sense of nostalgia, and it looks like it's done right. And, you know, just seeing those, you know, few minutes, I'm like, flashbacks of childhood, like...
And even have... Launchpad McQuack in the, yes. In the video too, so yeah, I'm down. Like Launchpad is probably one of my favorite characters. I usually love him on Darkwing Duck.
Yes. Do we get a Darkwing Duck? You know,
that's
I
been
mean,
a rumored thing yeah. that you're getting a Darkwing Duck eventually too. But I think we talked about this DuckTales reboot like a year ago, and we're just now seeing footage. So yeah. Animation takes a long time. It's not like a regular movie. You're like, hey, they're doing this movie, and like 6 months later, we've got like a trailer. Yeah, you know, it takes a long time to do animation.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I don't know. We still don't have an official, you know, date as of yet that I've been able to find. So, you know, hold on to your hats. Looks like, you know, sometime in 2017, hopefully we will have a final product that we will be, you know, DVRing or watching real time on Disney's XD. Probably about the only show that we're recording off that channel right now, probably. What? Disney XD. I don't know.
I was watching Rebels, but...
Yeah. Didn't it take a little bit of a hiatus, though, or...
I don't know. It's like... I think we forgot to put it on the DVR, because I've not watched it since last season.
I don't know. I've always caught everything on Netflix. Speaking of which, Netflix is actually, you know, working on the Castlevania series, and, you know, the producers come out and said, hey, if you like Dread... You folks are absolutely going to love this. So, you know, I was kind of wondering how they were going to do a...
I mean, is it a live action or an animated?
No, it's going to be a animated, you know, and it's going to be based on the, you know, video games, you know, as far as I know as of right now. So, I mean,
I haven't seen Castlevania on TV since... Remember Captain, was it Captain N?
I believe so.
Because whatever, what was the main guy's name from Castlevania? It wasn't Van Helsing, it was, I don't know. But
I mean, there was Dracula, there was Ada Sanker, there was...
John Belmont,
yep.
Yep, that was the guy that was on Captain N.
Yeah, and, you know, this is supposed to be featuring, you know, all of the Belmont family, so... You know, still, we don't have a official date or an exact date as of yet. Once again, sometime 2017 seems to be a running trend.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't know. I'm kind of curious. Like, I'm wondering how the adaptation, you know, is going to be. You know, it looks like this is going to be based off of Castlevania 3. And, you know, as of right now, it still looks like that's the case. So, I don't know. Just have to see how it plays out. I was a big fan of Dread. So, you know, I kind of got high hopes for this now.
That's another movie. We need another Dread movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
The second one was, like, really good.
And then we're going to talk a little bit about video games now. So, you know, everybody's probably familiar if you have an Xbox, you know, whether it be 360 or Xbox One, anyway, you pay for the Xbox Live. Well, it looks like Microsoft is announcing a new $10 monthly gaming service for the Xbox One. So basically what you'll be able to do is they're going to dub this the Game Pass. And, you know, anybody that has an Xbox One, you can download and play games from, you know, right now over 100 different Xbox One and Xbox 360 backward compatible titles for $9.99. So, you know, you play the game, and it's going to kind of do like Netflix is the way they're describing, is they're going to rotate games in and out. However, you know, any of your save data or anything like that is going to be retained on your hard drive. And you
mean
know,
they're going to do what PlayStation did like a year ago? They're
kinda. I mean, but you know, with this too, like if you decide that hey, I want to own this game permanently and buy it outright, then you get a 20% off discount. You know, if you purchase a game. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think it could be kind of cool. I would like to see, you know, some of the games. As of right now, it looks like, you know, Halo 5, Mad Max, Mega Man Anniversary Collection, Gears of War, the Ultimate Edition, you know, are just a few that's been announced. You know, so stuff like Mega Man, where I'm like, I wonder how well it adapts and stuff. Like,
yeah, I haven't played a Mega Man game in a long time.
It may be cool just to try out. Be like, oh, this is fun as shit, and, you know, then buy the game outright. So,
I mean, if they bring back some... go all the way back to like Xbox and bring back some Knights of the Old Republic. I'll play that.
What was the Xbox 360 game? It was one of the Star Wars. Oh,
it might have been Knights of the Republic 2.
I don't know if it was Knights of the Old Republic or which one it was. But anyway, I downloaded it last month. I can't remember which one. But anyway, I got to say, like,
Force Unleashed.
It might have been, but, you know, kind of comparing Xbox to PS4, I got to say I've kind of been happier with the Xbox 360 and Xbox One downloads from Xbox Live more so than I have been with, you know, some of the PlayStation Plus, you know, free games that have been released. You know, Little Big Planet 3, that's a game I probably would not have went out and purchased, but, you know, I've been trying to find, you know, games that, you know, you could do two-player or whatever, and that's probably one of the most popular co-op games. You know, and it's actually been pretty fun. And, you know, I downloaded another little side-scroller game called Not a Hero, and it's just bloody and gory, and, you know, you assist the Bunny Lord in getting elected so he can clean up the town, and, you know, shenanigans ensue. So, alrighty. Mindless humor and, you know, mindless fun equals... probably a couple of hours of entertainment.
Sounds good.
Any other news?
Tacos.
We already did tacos.
All right, then now I'm done.
And it's not even Taco Tuesday. We did Taco Monday. We did Brad and Joe Monday since we didn't go to Mo Mondays.
And with that, check us out on CigarNerdPodcast.com. We're also on the ESO Network, ESOPodcast.com. Pick up some cool Cigar Nerd shirts at realmensmokecigars.com. Go to strikeforceenergy.com. Use 20% the Cigar Nerds podcast promo code for 20% off your order. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Cigar Nerd Pod. And he killed three guys with a fucking pencil. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.